Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And we have our co-host with us today, and that is Jeff Wininger, a former LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant from LAPD, and also has, lawenforcementconsultants.com, and I know I'm just going to run out of airtime here, and he's got this new book coming out called On Thin Ice. So you can go to jeffwininger.com or On Thin Ice. Facebook.com in order to get more information. So Jeff, stop being an overachiever, because I'm never going to get to the to our sponsor section if I keep having to go through this whole list of stuff. I didn't even mention that you working for the LA County Sheriff's Office before you went to LAPD or any of that other stuff. So don't get me talking about Rampart and all. Just stop. We've got our sponsors, our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them. I don't even know what week we're in right now, but we started satellite radio back on May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. We have not looked back. It's been just a blast. And so thank you so much to Compliant Technologies for helping us get there. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming the pages with 1.5 million people right now. Also, TwoBells.com. They've built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. We are doing a Two Bells giveaway today as well. Every time Jeff's on the show, we do a Two Bells giveaway. That means you get $20 off your purchase at our online store at Leo Roundtable. So all you have to do to enter is type in the number two, and then the letter B for Bell. So two digits, two, the number two, and the letter B, and give us your email address so that I can send that digital gift card code to you. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? You know, I kind of hinted we have a cool first story. Colorado AG, the Attorney General, sues a sheriff's deputy because he helped ICE, if you can believe that. Curious where that's going to go. Then we have charges filed in a shooting of an off-duty Customs and Border Patrol officer. Remember that one that happened in New York City? Well, two people have been arrested in charge of reference to that. Thank God that they got that done. We got New York AG Attorney General releases body cam of officers fatally shooting a 66-year-old guy who injured an officer in a shooting. It's kind of wild how that goes down. So stay tuned for that one. Then we got body cam shows a Hazelwood officer shooting a man who tossed a butcher knife. We've got a Madison father charged in a school shooting, ordered to stand trial, but he was not the shooter, talking about him making guns available to the shooter. So stay tuned for that. We got Colorado Springs police release video of a deadly shooting of an armed guy in the downtown area. Also, Fort Lauderdale police released body cam of an officer fatally shooting a suspect armed with an airsoft gun. And then if we have time to get to it, dash cam captures a driver fleeing Wisconsin traffic stop. He rams police cars during a high-speed chase. So we got a lot to talk about. So if you're ready, Jeff, let's go ahead and start off with the first one, the main topic. RVMnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media. Colorado Attorney General sues the sheriff's deputy because he helped ICE. You know, I always smile when I read these because I have the opinion now, Jeff, that bring it on. Let's get the case law. Let's go ahead and take this up to the highest court in the land and get this thing settled. And I suspect that they'll settle in our favor. Colorado Attorney General, and this is Phil Weiser, has filed a lawsuit against the Mesa County Sheriff's Office deputy Alexander Zwink, that's Z-W-I-N-C-K, accusing him of violating state law by allegedly cooperating with federal immigration authorities to detain a 19-year-old illegal alien. They keep talking about civil infractions here instead of criminal, which I find kind of fascinating since we're dealing with an illegal alien. But AG Weiser announced a lawsuit Tuesday stating that the deputy's actions constituted unauthorized participation in a federal immigration enforcement routine. And he said that is prohibited under Colorado state law. And here's a quote saying Colorado law is clear. It is illegal for local law enforcement to carry out federal immigration enforcement. And this is what he posts on social media. He goes on to say, and in Colorado, we do not allow the federal government to commandeer local resources for their own agenda, unquote. So it's obvious where he stands on all this stuff. The lawsuit filed in Mesa County District Court seeks a court order barring the deputy from engaging in similar actions in the future. It doesn't talk about any other sanctions that I can really see. Just says don't do it again. And so if for a criminal infraction that this deputy supposedly did, That's kind of like a, it's kind of like, you know what, hot air, right? According to the complaint, deputies Wink allegedly accessed and shared the driver's personal identifying information with federal officials for the purposes related to a civil immigration enforcement, something that state law does not permit local officers to do. And I guess the state law makes a difference between criminal and civil infractions, and saying that if it's civil, you can't, you know, play with the feds. The incident began on June the 5th when the deputy conducted a traffic stop on a 19-year-old for following a semi-truck too closely. The driver produced her license, it was a female, her registration and insurance information. The deputy's accused of uploading this to Signal group chat that included federal immigration officials. So it says that instead of ending the communications with the officials on the group chat, since there was no criminal matters to follow up on, it says the deputy proceeded to assist the federal immigration officers in detaining the driver. It goes on to say that state investigators alleged that deputies Wink stalled the traffic stop to give ICE time to arrive, provided the immigration officers with his location, gave a description of the vehicle and her license plate and her direction of travel after leaving the scene. So it's kind of funny. They say that he stalled the traffic stop to give ICE time to arrive, but he did cut her loose and they ended up catching up with her. It says that they held her for more than 2 weeks. And in this case, the driver was detained by immigration authorities because of the actions by Colorado law enforcement, despite the absence of any criminal activity on her part. And it kind of goes on to say that there's administrative investigations also been opened by the Mesa County Sheriff's Office into the deputy's actions. So that's going to be like an internal affairs investigation. State claims that this may not have been an isolated incident. Now they're looking at whether other cops in the Signal group chats have also participated in similar conduct, and they want to make an example, I guess, out of them. The case comes amid ongoing debate surrounding Colorado sanctuary policies, particularly in Denver. The state and its capital have been criticized for limiting cooperation with federal immigration authorities. So this is not a new story. It's just a new incident of when it happened. Jeff Weininger, love to get your input on this one.
Yeah, I think it's quite a complex issue that we're talking about. I can appreciate some of the things that, Colorado is trying to do with their state laws. And the reason I say that is because working in Los Angeles, where we have a significant percentage of the population that's undocumented,
they're not illegal, they're undocumented.
Undocumented or illegal, you know, whatever we want to call them. I mean, you know, people can argue is that you know, you got people that have lived here two decades. They own homes and things. Oh, yeah. And they never done what they need to do to be here legally, but they're paying taxes and things like that. But, you know, it's when you have an environment, when you're policing communities that are that diverse, you have to be able to maintain some trust. So I understand it from a policing communities on a daily basis, because you need to have people feel comfortable coming forward and reporting crime, being witnesses to crime. If you see something, say something to, you know, help prevent perhaps some type of terrorist attack or things of that nature. So those are all things that you need to consider. But at the same time, local law enforcement should not be the enemy of the federal government's enforcement activities. And there has to be, we can't just draw this line in the sand saying, no, in our state, this is what we're going to do. We need to work cooperatively with the federal government and come to the table with some type of proposed issues. And I'll relate this to California. You know, a lot of people are, you know, upset about the what's being characterized as a sweeping broad brush enforcement operations that are occurring. Perhaps those wouldn't be necessary if the law enforcement agencies in the state would make it legal for the law enforcement agencies first and foremost, and the law enforcement agencies would then follow through with giving these violent criminals that are illegal or undocumented to the federal government when they're already in their custody. So there's things, because I don't think there's anybody, regardless of your political ideology, it's going to say that we don't want to not deport violent criminals that are here illegally. Everybody wants to do that. But when we're not even willing to, from a state or local police level, help facilitate that, then that's where we get into all of these problems, additional problems. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done, primarily with a lot of these states that consider themselves sanctuary states or cities in, within those states that are sanctuary cities. They need to find a way to come to some compromised solution to helping the federal government accomplish what they are doing. And quite frankly, it may even benefit those jurisdictions because the federal government's activities will be more focused and directed and surgical on these people that are actually the violent criminals and perhaps not require these broad brush, broad sweeps that are being conducted. So, you know, those are kind of my thoughts on it. But like I said, I do appreciate the concern that you have to have for everyday policing of people that are here illegally, but are law-abiding citizens. We still need them to be effective and efficient in our policing of the communities to feel comfortable approaching law enforcement as victims, as witnesses, and, you know, perhaps the eyes that prevent a terrorist attack.
Yeah, you know, any predictions? I know we got 30 seconds before we take our break, but any predictions on this officer? You know, they don't want him to do it again. It seems like a slap on the wrist. Doesn't seem like they're, well, I know there's still an IA investigation going on, so it's hard for me to believe the AG is going to get involved for a local agency, and they're not going to try to go after the guy. But any predictions in 10 seconds?
I don't think it's going to go anywhere other than, you know, I think this should be handled by the law enforcement agency. And if there's been violation of policy, you address it that way. But
I hope he holds on to his job and we get case law out of this. So look, guys, it's time for our first commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. You know, as police officers, we all know we can get our gear from a lot of different sources. When you bring the online option into it, the choices are almost endless, right? But I want to remind everybody about the importance of supporting companies that actually support law enforcement. I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking to get gear, please support our title sponsor by going to gauls@gauls.com. I think you'd be very, very glad that you did. I tell you, I love their boots. They've got fantastic boots. We talked about go bags recently. Jeff was on the show. They've got a lot of cool things going on, and they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card at Gauls.com. They'll be your new best friends as well. So go to Gauls.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. You know, I'm kind of, you know, this last story about the AG in Colorado going after a cop that was releasing some information on a stop to federal authorities, and the female traffic violator got detained by Customs and Border Patrol for, I believe they said, over 2 weeks. But I'm just kind of looking at some of the comments, even on Rumble. There's some welcome to the communist state of Colorado. But that was from MVS, who actually lives there. And if they are illegal, then they are not law abiding. And we got some other comments. This is what happens when former California citizens move to other states. So we got some interesting commentary going on social media. So thanks for watching the show. And this is all the benefit for doing the live stream and stuff. And
Chip, in the whole thing, right, what I think the officer should be most concerned about is a Fourth Amendment violation, if in fact he did extend the detention beyond what would legally be permissible for the reasonable purpose that he stopped them. So to me, that's really the only, that's the misstep. I don't, whatever the laws are, I don't know what the policies are of the department. But perhaps he, you know, his actions conflict with that. But this is just really, I don't see anything really happening too critical to the officer. It's just more grandstanding and perhaps making an example of somebody.
Okay. And I see, you know, we are doing a two belts giveaway today too, guys. So I see we've got a lot of guys and girls that are watching the stream, and we got Todd Irving is back on. Todd, I know that you're a new addition to the show, so thanks for watching. Edward Gardner's already entered the contest. We got John Cox, Priscilla Miller, and quite a few other people. So don't forget to enter that contest by typing the number 2 and the letter B for Bell. Also, give us your email address if you're interested in winning that 2 Bells giveaway, $20 giveaway for our online store. So, Jeff, you ready to go on to the next one, which is an update story, I believe? All right. So good coverage on that one. We'll keep you guys advised on what's, as this thing cycles through the court system. But TampaFP.com, charges filed in a shooting of the off-duty Customs and Border Patrol officer that was in New York City. So we all remember that. The United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, it's U.S. Attorney Jay Clayton, and Homeland Security Investigation Special Agent in Charge Ricky Patel on Thursday announced charges against two guys, Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez and Christian Arba Barrero. And this is in connection with the July 19 shooting of the off-duty Customs and Border Patrol officer. And it happened in Fort Washington Park. To remind people, it was in Manhattan. The off-duty officer was shot in the face and in the right arm. According to the allegations in the complaint, the officer returned fire. He struck Mora Nunez twice, which is pretty impressive, you know, when the officer ends up getting hit in the face and the arm, before our bad guy fled the scene on a motorbike, but it was driven by somebody else, the other guy, Barora, and it subsequently, the second guy transported him, took the first guy to the hospital because he'd been shot twice, and then he tries to dispose of the bloody clothing that was worn in the incident. So they both got in the grease for it. And anyhow, so I could keep reading. One's 21 years old, one's 22. They're both from the Dominican Republic and entered in illegally and remain in the U.S. unlawfully. And they are subject to removal orders already. And so I talked about that, but I'm glad that it seems like they pretty quickly identified these guys, found them and arrested them. So I'm good to, you know, I think we're good to go on that. I'm pretty happy with that. Jeff?
Well, I think that's the message that needs to be heard, in that an individual is going to engage in this type of activity and have violent crime committed against law enforcement officers, but not just law enforcement officers, citizens in general, that the law enforcement is going to take that seriously and going to have robust investigations, or they're going to seeking out the perpetrators and arresting them and holding them accountable to the full extent of the law. And in this case, hopefully deportation. And this is the stuff that I'm talking about, you know, in California or in Colorado, perhaps these individuals would be in state custody and the local authorities may not work cooperatively with the federal government to transfer them to the federal agency for deportation purposes. And that's a mistake. And that's what we need to clean up. But, you know, I'm glad to see that the investigation was effective and resulted in the quick arrest of these individuals. It sends a strong message. And because if you look at what's a deterrent of crime, one of the most significant deterrents of crime is not necessarily how long you may be sentenced to prison, but it's the reality that strong likelihood you're going to be captured.
Recidivism.
And you're going to be captured. So you know you're going to be captured. Just sending a message. You do this, you're going to get captured. You're going to be found out. You're going to be held to the highest standard of law. So it's a good thing that it evolved in the way that it did.
Yeah, I'm not excited about having to pay for these guys to sit in jail. I suspect they'll do some serious time before they get to the deportation phase of things because of the seriousness of the charges. But
It's. My thought is, we just get them out of here.
I've thought about that because you're right. It's a drain on the taxpayer. It's a drain on the system, right? I mean, you and I are footing the bill to keep them here, and then I guess under the Biden administration, if we got rid of them, they simply would just come back. So I guess things have changed now, arguably with the Trump administration. But really, I mean, you know, we had so many repeat offenders, previously. So maybe I need to. You know, maybe I need to change my school of thought on that. You know, since things have changed, we have a new commander in chief and we have tight borders and stuff, and we got rid of them. I'd have to think about that for a while. I don't know. I'm curious what people think about that. Watch the show. You guys, someone that commits, you know, shoots an off-duty Customs and Border Patrol agent in the face and the arm, nearly kills them. Or what if they kill somebody? At what level do you start paying to incarcerate people here, or maybe even make them, you know, what if it's a, what if it's a capital offense? You know, where does that end? But we're we'll end with that question. We've got our second commercial break coming up. Stick with us, guys. It's going to get good. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about, yes, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries because the Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies.com. All right. And now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up July 30th, all about abandonment. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue. Again, BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and your co-host is Jeff Wenninger from LAPD. We just got done talking about the two bad guy illegals that were in New York that ended up shooting an off-duty Customs and Border Patrol agent. And we kind of posed a question, or I guess I posed a question about at what point do you stop entertaining holding people accountable over here in our jail system and start saying, hey, we want to go in and deport them. Things have changed. And obviously I know we have a new commander in chief and the border's locked down now, but when Biden was in office, I got to tell you, I wasn't really a big fan of deporting people because of the repeat offenders. They just came right back across the border again, but things have changed now. And so Jeff brings up a really good point that got my mind thinking. And you know, at what point are they no longer a burden to the taxpayers? Or what point do we make that decision where it's more important, it's more worthy of our concerns to incarcerate them, or maybe even if it's a capital crime, as opposed to just simply deport them? And the likelihood of them coming back is pretty remote. So,
you know, thinking outside the box, because I'm telling you, Trump does it. He thinks outside the box. It'd be interesting if he could negotiate with these other countries.
Incarcerate them there?
Yes. Where if they didn't, then he would impose additional sanctions against them or whatever. There needs to be reciprocity where that if you're convicted here and you're sentenced to 20 years, we send you to wherever you came from and they're required to keep you for those 20 years.
And if we have an American, and then I wonder how that works, though, because, you know, I don't know about the court systems over there. We got some places like in Russia, they'll grab an American tourist and.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, you'd be better off if you're an American that gets charged with a crime and convicted in another country. I think you would rather serve it in the United States than that other country.
You're probably right.
I don't know, though, but it's, you know, I could see something like that, because at the end of the day, should these other countries not be accountable to the people they're allowing their citizens that are violent criminals to go to other countries? You need to be responsible for that.
Yeah, there's border patrol on both sides of the border, you know, by both countries. So you're absolutely right. That's certainly a worthy conversation to have. That's certainly worthy of exploring. Yeah, I like that. All right. That's good. Well, if I ever use that, I'll make sure I give you credit for that, Jeff. So. All right. Hey, moving along here. Oh, you know what? On Thin Ice, your book coming out. What's the latest update with On Thin Ice?
Well, it's coming out. I'm going to be making the announcement of the official release date. I will be making that here first on LEO Roundtable. And if you go to my social media, Facebook at Jeff Wenninger, or a LinkedIn at Jeff Wininger, you'll be able to see and learn more about that.
All right. I love it. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks. I'm looking forward to that date as well. So, and, you know, Jeff and I, just for people know, we were talking about SHOT Show. I've already registered myself and Brett for SHOT Show coming up, you know, in January. And we just did that over the weekend. And so we're going to be there, and there's a good likelihood, I think, that Jeff will be joining us there. So hopefully that'll all work out. So those people that are planning on going to SHOT Show, keep that in mind. We are also planning on doing live shows from SHOT Show as well. That should be Monday through Thursday. I think we're going to be leaving Friday morning, so I don't think we'll be able to pull that off unless we do it from the airport on Friday. But we'll be doing some live shows, which should be pretty fun, because we can grab people there to be on the show, and we run into some pretty interesting characters. And then our title sponsor, Galls, at galls.com, you know, they're going to have a hand in all this too. They'll, you know, Mike Fadden, the CEO, will be there. We're going to have a lot of fun and rubbing elbows with some interesting people. So anyhow, so be expecting to hear more news about that. And if you guys are interested or just contemplating SHOT Show, maybe you should put that on the agenda, because we're going to, you know, we're going to be there, and we're going to want to see some of our fan base there. So that'll be kind of cool. So any final words on that, Jeff? Everything sound good?
Sounds good. I hope to be there.
All right. Cool. Well, look, let's go to a story with a video component. Our first, you know, there's a couple interesting ones that came out here, and we've got 6 minutes before our third commercial break here. So at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, we have the New York Attorney General releasing body cam of officers fatally shooting a 66-year-old guy who injured an officer in a shooting.
He'll come after you. Come over here. Hurry up. I see that. Put your fucking gun down now! Fuck you. 7-4 Mabel, shots fired. Ah, fuck! Fuck! 7-4 Mabel, I've been hit. God, fuck!
It's more of what happens to the officer and how he handles it that I found kind of fascinating. The bad guy in this, there's a video component. Obviously, on a live show, you guys can't see it. We'll describe in great detail what's going on, so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But in the video, the bad guy is really hard to see, almost impossible. But listen to what happens here. We're in MENA, New York. So the New York Attorney General's office released the body cam footage of both deputies that were involved in a fatal shooting that happened last month in this town of MENA. It's a 4-minute video. It shows the deputies arrive, and they tell a 66-year-old guy, who's our suspect, Mark Bemis, to drop the weapon that he was holding, and they tell him that several times. And he's holding a long gun. Now, I believe it was a shotgun. At least we have one place in the article that says a shotgun. I'm just surprised at the distance that, and maybe that's why our cop's finger, it looked like there was a pretty good chunk out of the finger that was missing, but maybe if it would have been a big projectile, you know, the whole hand would have been gone. I don't know. Maybe it was just, you know, one of the pellets from the shotgun. But in Deputy Dietzel's body cam footage, about 3.5 minutes after arriving and telling our bad guy Bemis to drop the weapon, gunfire rings out, and it ends with Bemis, our bad guy, being fatally shot. Deputy Summers' footage, the other deputy, shows him pleading with Bemis before exchanging gunfire and being shot in his hand. Now, police are called to a house in MENA, New York, for a domestic incident and this is after about 3:30 on June the 18th, and they arrive about 20 minutes later. But it says 3:30, but it doesn't say AM or PM, but it was daytime. So this is going to be in the afternoon. So the Chautauqua County Sheriff's Office, hopefully I didn't butcher the name, they say back in June, our bad guy came outside with a shotgun, and despite attempts to de-escalate, there was an exchange of gunfire with two deputies. I will tell you that The deputy, there's our main deputy with the first body cam. He's having a long exchange with the guy, and the guy's saying like, F you. You can hear the response. The guy looks like he's back in the garage area of a house with an open garage door. And there is a female to the left by the doorway. And just before the shooting goes down, you hear the cop talking to the female, and she says something to the effect of, confirms to the officer that, yeah, there's a chance the bad guy could come with a shotgun over the where she's at. So the officer tells her to come to him and to hurry it up. So it's like a triangle. You got, you know, the bad guy with an open garage, and then to the side of the, to the other side of the house is her by the front door. And then the deputy is behind a tree. And, you know, it's like a big triangle, but I was so surprised that he wanted her to come to him. There's no cover. And if the bad guy really wanted to take her out, you know, at least where she was at, you had two cops that could, you know, they had pistols and not long guns. And that's another argument too. Why did they have long guns? But he's wanting her to come to him, which she's doing. And then all of a sudden the bad guy raises the gun apparently. And now the cop either becomes concerned for himself or her that's approaching him. And he starts doing shots at the bad guy. And then while this is going on, he gets on radio. He stops his string of fire. He gets on radio. They tell dispatch shots are fired. And I'll be, as soon as he goes off back to the handgun, boom, shot. Two shots go off from the shotgun, and one of them just blasts his finger. He's got blood pouring everywhere. And but he stays in the fight, neutralizes the bad guy, and you're not really aware of it when the we're so far away. But they neutralize and they kill the bad guy. So that's the way this goes. This goes down. Actually, you know, I'm taking this here. No, the bad guy, yeah, he was declared dead at the scene, and the deputy was taken for treatment. Jeff Winninger, you got about a minute and a half.
Well, you know, when I first, I watched this whole thing, and the initial video was of the deputy that apparently arrived second, and he does deploy a long gun from the interior of his vehicle where his.
Seriously, did I miss that? I must have missed that. Yeah. Okay.
And, but that said, I didn't have a lot of confidence in his manipulation of that weapon system, wherein I just didn't get this feeling that he didn't seem to be very familiar with it, from, you know, how he was managing, manipulating it, to how he was slinging it. And it all looked very unrehearsed and unpracticed. But then you notice that the officer that was shot, his police cruiser is parked right in front of the location on the street. You never want to do that. You always want to park away, and especially the nature of this type of call, and walk up and use the environment to your benefit. And it's use strong tactics. What are tactics? Using every opportunity possible to maximize your ability to remain safe. Minimize the bad actor's potential to cause you harm is essentially what you're trying to do. And there's other things we'll talk about when we get back from the break.
All right. Well, and I'm glad you saw more than I saw. So, wow, thanks. Hey, stick with us, guys. Commercial break will be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Lawsuits, injuries, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also these disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And look, we're a law enforcement talk show joined by LAPD Jeff Winninger, our co-host. I'm Chip the Block, your host. And let me just go ahead and get it out here. We did a Two Bells giveaway, and it's going to Edward Gardner and a deputy. I'm not sure where he's a deputy at. I have his email address, and since deputy is in the email address, I'm assuming he's a deputy. So congratulations, Edward, for winning the Two Bells giveaway. I got your email address. So I'll email that to you at the end of the show. If you don't mind plugging in, you know, where your deputy at, I would love to know as well. You know, we were talking during the commercial break about, you know, and then before the commercial break about this scene where we had a bad guy with a shotgun and we have two responding deputies. And Jeff actually noticed that one of the deputies deployed a long gun, but seemed to have some difficulty with it, which arguably allowed him to shoot the other deputy in the hand. But more commentary on that, Jeff?
Yeah. So like I said, you know, I saw something that was quite glaring. And I spoke to it prior to the break, was that the original responding officer parked directly in front of the location. And then he proceeds to take cover behind that tree that you spoke of, which really, in that close proximity to where he was the most appropriate cover that he could utilize and still be able to maintain eyes on the suspect. That being said, he was still at a great distance from the suspect. And it was... So he began to verbalize, and I'm not quite sure it was the best means of trying to de-escalate. He's just yelling how if he doesn't drop the gun, he's going to shoot and kill him and those sorts of things. You know, it's sometimes, like we've always said, we're oftentimes the greatest actors in law enforcement. So you need to act and try to find some common ground, you know, talk about how bad of a day you're having and, you know, try to show some type of understanding of where this guy may be, whereas you can get a little bit of compliance, perhaps.
Hey, but, my wife's a pain in the two.
Yeah, there you go. But then he, like you'd spoken of, he inquired to the wife who was standing at the front door, right on that front porch. He said, can he get into the house from the garage? And she says, yes. And that's what prompted him to ask her to come to him. But prior to that, he actually, for some reason, he left cover and started backing away from the tree. That was the only thing that provided him cover. He then went back there, but that created a potential tragic incident where the wife was now exposed and it could have gotten really ugly. She could have been between the officer and the suspect, and with the woman between them, that could have been really ugly. That being said, listen, when this guy got shot in the hand, you see that he reloads. Mm-hmm. That speaks to some level of mindset, proficiency. He's trained that, I'm sure. When you mimic the type of injury and you still have to reload your weapon system. And he did a fine job of that. He seemed to keep his mind about himself, kept his cool, stayed in the fight. Yes, it was a pretty gruesome injury. Blood was flowing quite heavily. So he could be commended for that, but I don't quite understand why he didn't have a long gun. If I would assume that he would have a long gun just as his, the other person from the agency did. And that could have come in quite handy because you can articulate, you know, when we used to train in Metropolitan Division, which is like the special forces of the LAPD, when I was an officer there, we used to do bank stakeouts. So we would be contacted by the elite detectives at Robbery Homicide Division who are monitoring these bank robbery, groups of people, and they would have ideas on perhaps where they may be hitting next, and we would stake them out. And part of our training for that was that if the suspect leaves the bank, and if you begin to confront them and they want to go back into the bank and they attempt to go back into the bank, what is that? That's a deadly force scenario. You cannot allow them to go back into the bank because of the reasonable belief that the suspect's going to pose a risk of serious bodily injury or death to the people that are still inside the bank. So you have to know where you stand with that. So that rather than asking the woman to come to you, just know if that guy starts to make any movement to go back into the House, you've decided that I reasonably believe that he is now a threat of serious bodily injury or death to that woman. Therefore, lethal force would be justified. So you need to think through these things beforehand, so you're not in the heat of the moment trying to figure out what you're going to do, because you may make a judgment call and a decision that's not the most optimal for your safety or the safety of citizens or you know, potential victims. So something to consider.
What if that bad guy would have had a rifle instead of a shotgun? That could have changed the outcome.
It could have been really ugly.
Yeah. I mean, the shotgun, I'm thinking especially with that distance, was a blessing in the situation. In my mind, I'm so glad. I mean, a rifle with or without a scope. I would not want to have gone up against that guy with a rifle. So, wow. Yeah. Could have been much worse.
Much worse. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got 3.5 minutes. So thank you much on that one, Jeff. Let's move to our next one here. Another story with a video component, rumble.com. This is Butter again. Body camera video shows a Hazelwood police officer shooting a man that is armed who tosses a butcher knife.
Don't worry, step it up.
162.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on?
Bro, look at my fucking gear. He hit me with the fucking gun.
Okay. All right, hold on. Stop. On.
The police are cutting
out the somebody hit you with a gun?
Yes, bro. He hit me with the gun.
Hey, let the fucking gun, what? Stop it!
You shot my
hand! 163, shots fired. Get out of the ground!
I need all units around to.
Stay right there. We got EMS. 163, start EMS. Stay down.
There is some confusion in this. Maybe rightfully so. On May 26, a man armed with a knife was shot by a Hazelwood police officer. Now in the body cam on Thursday, it shows the officer arriving at this home. And he approaches a man leaving with a bag in his hand, and it's some kind of a domestic. In fact, even when the officer gets there, you can hear some yelling and shouting going on. There's two males and a female. But all he sees right now is this guy coming down the driveway towards the officer. He's got a bag in his hand. The man tells the officer that he's been hit with a gun. He's holding his head then we see the woman that's standing outside the doorway. And then all of a sudden a man opens up this doorway outside, you know, in the house, and he steps out of the house, but he's still in the doorway, and he's holding something in his right hand. Now, after seeing the man with an object in his hand, the officer immediately draws his weapon, his duty pistol, and he says, "Drop the expletive gun." And so that's what the officer is. Now, as soon as the officer says that, and I mean as soon as he says that, this guy moves the item up to his chest level, and in my opinion, in direction of the officer. And the officer fires two shots, boom, boom. And he then at that point, the bad guy who goes down, and he's still a bad guy because he was uncooperative. He did not follow the instructions from the officer. He tells the officer, though, he did not have a gun, but that he was holding a knife. And so our bad guy is Jeffrey Thompson Sr. He's 65 years old, and he ends up later, he's charged with one count of unlawful use of a weapon. And that's probably from the battery on the victim that was holding the bag when the cop got there. Investigators said that a semi-automatic pistol was actually found inside the home after the shooting. And the guy with the bag said that the guy had hit him with a pistol, which is another reinforcement of maybe why this guy, the cop, thought that maybe it was a pistol in the guy's hand. Officers also found a large knife that the guy actually had in his hand when he was shot. So that's the way this goes down. We got about a minute and 15 seconds. Lieutenant Jeff Winninger.
Yeah, this is a perfect example of how our brains are not reactive, they're predictive. So the officer's responding to a call where the victim is stating he was hit in the head with a firearm. He gets there, he makes contact with the victim who states he was hit in the head with a firearm. The potential suspect comes out and there's a woman with him. When he sees something in his hand, his brain is programmed at this point, predictive, that he... I believe 100% that he thought he saw a gun. And it's corroborated not only by what we know, how our brains work, but also the fact that the officer said, drop the gun. So people that want to be critical that the officer fired at a guy who was armed with just a knife, who was at a significant difference, the reality is that was a man that was armed with a gun from the perspective of the officer. And you can't fault the officer in that circumstance.
All right, beautiful. I totally agree. That's the way it goes down. So, and that was a great explanation of how that happens, Jeff. Thank you to Jeff for being on the show. Jeff Weninger, he's got the book On Thin Ice coming out. You go to jeffweninger.com or onthinicebook.com to get more information. And I want to go ahead and mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And if you want to check them out, it's at thewoundedblue.org. So make sure you check them out. I support them on a monthly basis because I know they're not going to embarrass me like some other organizations. So please check them out. I think they're worthy of your support. And guys, our sponsors, please support our sponsors. They go to the great lengths to make sure that this show is available to you guys. And radio is not cheap. So a shout out to Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and also Two Bells for built a new online store. And make sure you check them out and check out this gear at LeoRoundtable.com. Thanks, guys, for watching the show. We'll look for you back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern, LeoRoundtable.com.